previously on Robbery, Inc. In the Merida police reports, officers described Morris Lynn Johnson as a prime suspect who was known to have been in the area recently. He had allegedly robbed a bank in Commerce, Georgia, and was a fugitive on these charges.
FBI Assistant Agent William Bailey said Johnson was arrested as a parole violator on a federal fugitive warrant and is being held in Jefferson County Jail in Louisville without bond.
Names, names, and more names. Merida police and the FBI were hot on the trail of Morris Lynn Johnson and his criminal associates.
The bags contained $22,000 in checks and cash. The thieves pocketed the cash and left the checks. Previously, the FBI reported only $1,000 missing, hardly worth the burglar's 2 months' work.
That's right. Our prime suspect for the Cobb Exchange burglary is on the run. Not only that, but he's been a fugitive for over 7 months since his second escape from the Atlanta penitentiary. In April 1974, a group of thieves tunneled beneath Roswell Street in Merida, Georgia, and blasted their way into the Cobb Exchange Bank vault, only to be mocked for escaping with just $1,000. But as investigators dug deeper, they uncovered a far bigger mystery and the story of a career bank robber whose daring heists and prison escapes made him a legend. This is Robbery, Inc., from Georgia Public Broadcasting and the Merida Daily Journal. I want you to think back to a time when you were small, when your imagination got the best of you. You're running around in your backyard or your neighborhood you grew up in, and you're playing cops and robbers with the local kids. Who did you always want to be? If you were like me, you always chose robbers. There's something about being the big bad, the thrill of being chased, of getting away with something you're not supposed to. It's more fun that way. As you get older, you realize that robbing banks comes with consequences outside the realm of playtime. No one wants to be branded as a thief. No one dreams of becoming a bank robber. No one wants to live in infamy as an outlaw, right? I'm Madison Elizabeth Hogan, and you're listening to Robbery, Inc., Episode 4, The Man, the Myth, the Legend. We're back with part 2. Who is Morris Lynn Johnson? If you've been listening up until now, you know he's the prime suspect in the Cobb Exchange bank burglary from April 22, 1974. He spent months digging a 135-foot tunnel under Roswell Street with two other men to blast through the safety deposit vault and steal $22,000 in cash and checks. He robbed a bank in Commerce, Georgia, and held up the Citizens and Southern National Bank in DeKalb County, Georgia, just months prior to the Cobb Exchange job. He drove a blue 1967 Chevy Impala and wore hats and wigs to disguise himself. He had a fugitive wife named Laura Kay, who would do anything for him, even bribe a prison guard to help him escape. Here's how the FBI described Morris Lynn Johnson in the front page story announcing his addition to the 10 most wanted list.
Johnson is described as being 6 foot tall with a medium build, brown hair, blue eyes, and 4 tattoos. One of the tattoos is of a small girl and the word Jill on his right shoulder, a similar girl and the word Gail on the left shoulder, a woman in a champagne glass on his chest, and a cross on his left forearm. Anyone with information as to Morris Lynn Johnson's whereabouts is asked to call the nearest FBI office.
From his 1974 mugshot, I can tell you that MLJ, as we'll call him henceforth for brevity's sake, had a 5 o'clock shadow with long sideburns. A large brow set his face, framed by brown hair with a slight auburn hue. His eyes noted a vividly pale blue, deep set and hooded, were reminiscent of an old Hollywood movie star, like Marlon Brando or Robert Redford. His lips are slightly parted, as they usually are in most pictures I've seen of him, like the top lip is too short to fully cover his teeth. Donning a green collared shirt and a gray blazer, his expression isn't mean or hardened the way most criminals are in their lineup. In fact, you'd likely see the same expression in a passport or a driver's license. Calm and collected. Is this the man responsible for the Mission Impossible crime? We might know him as a suspect in our mystery, but MLJ was more than just a small-town burglar. This man had a rap sheet nearly as long as that tunnel. Born October 24, 1937, to Armour Johnson and Delcy Johnson, MLJ came from a modest upbringing in Tompkinsville, Kentucky. One of seven siblings, MLJ was raised on a small farm until the family moved to Indianapolis to a two-bedroom home sometime in 1947. He grew up in the Drexel Gardens neighborhood on Beecher Street, his father a factory worker and his mother a short-order cook at several drugstores around town. By the time he was 20, he committed his first act of burglary, not too far from home. He burglarized Hugh J. Baker & Company warehouse, a steel manufacturer on Farnsworth Street in Indianapolis that his father had worked at for years. But he didn't act alone, as we'll come to find out he rarely ever did. He was joined by other youths, as well as his longtime friend and partner in crime, Franklin Rance. For the next 2 years, MLJ was in and out of police cars with his brother, Leon Johnson. Will Higgins wrote for the Indianapolis Star that MLJ was considered a natural-born leader among his peers. Friends and neighbors interviewed years later regarded him as suave, good-looking, polite, and nonviolent. Marvin Jock Earls, his neighbor from across the street, noted that MLJ was robbing banks, but
none of the folks from Drexel Gardens had money in the banks anyways.
In November 1962, he knocked over the Merchants National Bank and Trust Company branch on English Avenue in Indianapolis, making off with $8,890. At his court appearances, local media fawned over his rebel without a cause look, his cool demeanor, his steady gaze. They claim the 24-year-old was the leader of the most notorious group of bank robbers since John Dillinger. He was rumored to steal television sets and hand them out to impoverished neighborhoods around Indy. Even the law had a brazen respect for him, a professional who was never caught in the banks he robbed or put citizens in harm's way. The crimes were legendary, involving up to 100 members in the gang. Police believe they were responsible for somewhere close to 3,400 crimes throughout the Midwest between 1958 and 1963. That's an average of 680 crimes per year in a 5-year time span. Law enforcement gave them a name befitting of their crimes: Robbery, Inc. Despite his good looks and self-confidence, the law was closing in on MLJ by the early 60s. He would commonly post bond only to knock over a bank days later to pay his lawyers. By February 1963, Indiana State Senator John C. Ruckelshaus introduced a bill targeting Johnson, making posting bail harder for those who committed crimes while out on bond. The heat was on with MLJ on the FBI's radar. So much so that he attempted to seek a restraining order against agents, local police, the Indianapolis mayor, and the governor of Indiana. Those requests were ultimately denied. In 1963, he was finally sentenced by a federal jury in New Albany, Indiana, for robbing the Merchants National Bank and Trust Co., along with Mr. Rance, who served as the getaway driver. Just a side note, I find this hilarious, but my family is actually from Jeffersonville, Indiana, which is right next door to New Albany, and New Albany is actually where my grandmother's family is from. Though he confessed to nearly 300 other crimes, MLJ was adamant for years that he didn't rob this particular bank, instead claiming it was known associate William Kindler. Despite Kindler admitting to the robbery at trial, MLJ was sentenced to 18 years in federal prison. This brings us to MLJ's first day in the U.S. penitentiary in Atlanta. Just 3 years after his initial sentence, MLJ escaped on November 9, 1966, with another bank robber, Jesse James Roberts. His parents really set him up with that name. Mr. Roberts was in for robbing the Bank of Lenox in South Georgia of $38,000 that year. MLJ was able to lever apart the bars on his cell using a bar spreader he had crafted in the prison machine shop. The duo managed to scale the 40-foot prison wall using bed sheets and scraps for a makeshift ladder during a rainstorm. Prison guards and other inmates were none the wiser, busy watching a movie while MLJ and Jesse James made their escape. Only one other prisoner had successfully escaped the Atlanta Pen, and that was 40 years prior. Mr. Roberts was apprehended days later, on November 17th, on a bus in Waycross, Georgia. But he wouldn't give up the whereabouts of Morrislyn Johnson. But our criminal mastermind was homesick, and he was eventually captured back in Indy after robbing another bank in his hometown. He worked with Anthony Durham in a masked heist, armed with a sawed-off shotgun, to rob the East 10th Street branch of the American Fletcher National Bank and Trust Company for $10,375. He was captured that same day, on January 9, 1967, with two other robbers, Mr. Durham and John Martin Young, Jr., in a small Indianapolis apartment. Newspapers reported police seized dozens of guns in the home, though the men did not resist arrest. When he was arrested and brought to the federal courthouse on Ohio Street, he told an Indy Star reporter,
"Well, I sure lived it up for a couple of months. Boy, I've been living high. I sure hope I can figure out a way to get out for a while again."
Frank Anderson, a green-eared cop who would go on to serve as the first African-American sheriff of Marion County in Indiana, told Will Higgins of the Indy Star he drove MLJ from Indianapolis back to Atlanta in his Buick. Handcuffed, MLJ would remark,
"The height of my ambition is to escape from you."
MLJ pled guilty to 5 more years in prison, plus 3 more years for his escape, on top of his remaining 15-year sentence. That's a total of 23 years. By some miracle, or lapse of judgment, your pick, he was paroled from McNeil Island Corrections in Washington in December 1973. 2 months later, a notorious bandit was hitched with Laura K. Tilbury in Indianapolis. On the marriage license, MLJ wrote his occupation as a mechanic and still claimed his Beecher Street childhood home as his address. It was his second marriage. As we know, the Bonnie and Clyde couple spent their honeymoon preparing the burglary of the Cobb Exchange Bank in Georgia. Following their robberies in the Peach State, the Johnsons made their way back north before getting pinched for the Louisville robbery in May 1974. They stole more than $100,000 in a single bank job with another man, William Lewis Foster. That's roughly $700,000 by today's standards. They spent that summer going from prison to court to prison in Kentucky, and then back in Atlanta, facing charges and sentences for the crimes they had committed after tying the knot. What a way to celebrate your nuptials. MLJ was awaiting trial for the Cobb Exchange burglary and DeKalb County robbery when he escaped the Atlanta Pen for the second time in October 1975. He and Solomon K. Allen Jr. scaled the prison wall with another makeshift ladder. He would remain on the run when FBI agents raided an apartment in Long Beach, Mississippi in April 1976. In a scene you might see in an old Western, a shootout with police ended in wrecked cars, seizure of automatic weapons, and shotguns. and 2 arrests. MLJ's wheelman, Frey Grants, was arrested at the Longwood Apartments after agents rammed his sports car to prevent his escape when he tried to flee. Laura K. Johnson was found nearby driving a van in Gulfport, trying to escape. MLJ evaded officers with another suspect in a Dodge Charger after exchanging fire with law enforcement. The car was found abandoned in a densely wooded area where the two men fled on foot. Though police searched the Long Beach area for weeks following MLJ's appearance, he remained elusive, like smoke in their hands, always one step ahead. By May 1976, MLJ would finally make the FBI's most wanted list. He didn't disappear into the shadows either. That same month, MLJ made threatening phone calls to Laura Kay's attorney in Louisville after she was sentenced to 5 years for assault weapons charges. According to the Courier-Journal, he ordered the release of his wife, stating he would kill the judge who sentenced her if she wasn't. His cat-and-mouse game would come to an end a month later, on June 26, 1976, when he was finally captured by FBI agents in New Orleans. Again, found with an arsenal of shoulder weapons, handguns, and bulletproof vests, MLJ was arrested with John Paul Scott and his younger brother, Don Roderick Scott. Remember, John Paul Scott was also one of the suspects who aided and abetted MLJ during the Cobb Exchange burglary. The brothers were sent back to Atlanta for violating their parole. MLJ would follow them a few months later when he was extradited to Atlanta to testify in his own brother, Leon Johnson's, robbery trial in August 1976. Leon Johnson was accused of robbing the People's Bank of Bartow County in Taylorsville, Georgia, in March of that year. MLJ testified that it was he, not his brother, who had staged the stick-up with 3 other suspects. Leon Johnson was notably quiet, reserved, unlike his charismatic brother. Despite extensive questioning from the prosecution, MLJ couldn't recall the bank's exterior or interior, or the bank's personnel.
You see one bank, you've seen them all.
You've seen one bank, you've seen them all, he told the court. Whether he was lying for his brother or not, he was telling the truth with that statement. MLJ testified his brother was in Indianapolis at the time of the robbery. When asked if he committed the stick-up, he said,
I pulled it, yeah.
For his occupation, MLJ replied,
I'm a bank robber.
When asked if he was guilty of anything else, he said,
You guys keep me in the pen most of the time.
Well, you get out quite a bit, don't you? The prosecutor asked.
If you leave a hole for me.
Leave a hole for him, they must have once again. By November of that year, MLJ had escaped his 3rd prison, this time from Selma, Alabama, after an accomplice mailed him hacksaw blades. The package was not checked by the prison personnel due to a lack of return address. With the help of 5 other prisoners, MLJ sawed through the bars and made a rope out of bedsheets to climb to a separate section of the jail. Once on the main level, the prisoners used an electrical cord to activate a device that controlled one door and broke a bar on another to escape. One might argue that sending MLJ to a small-town jail was a mistake, but he was transported from the penitentiary in Louisiana to testify in another trial in Selma. After arriving at 2 p.m. on a Saturday in early November, he was out just 8 hours later. He celebrated his latest escape with joyful postcards he mailed to FBI agents, a judge, and the prosecutor in one of his upcoming trials. They were postmarked from Stevenson, Alabama, on his way out of the state. He wrote,
I do my thing, and you do your thing. If we should ever meet again, it's beautiful.
To commemorate his banner year, MLJ was nominated for the 1976 Indianapolis Star Man of the Year Award for his, quote, initiative, intelligence, and perseverance in dealing with the problems of prison security in our nation. He didn't win. On the next episode of Robbery, Inc., there were so many rumors surrounding the Marietta burglary But were they true? I've done my best to uncover the truth about what happened to the safe deposit boxes at the Cobb Exchange Bank.
It's kind of like people had money and nobody ever knew where it came from.
Well, it was just an unsuccessful bank robbery, is what they considered it.
And I frankly found out more about it since I've seen these reports. I found out more since we started talking about it than I knew at the time.
Safe deposit boxes are regarded as a legal no man's land. In 2019, the New York Times reported that there were roughly 25 million of these boxes in banks across the country, and no federal laws regulating them. Robbery, Inc. is a production of Georgia Public Broadcasting and the Marietta Daily Journal. Robbery, Inc. is written and hosted by Madison Elizabeth Hogan. I'm on Instagram at Madison Elizabeth Hogan. This podcast was produced and edited by GPB's podcast team of Jeremy Powell, Jake Cook, and Mark Davenport. Special thanks to Olivia Watkin, Jaden Henson, and Rachel Kellogg.